All right. I'm excited about this episode. I'm inspired about this episode of the podcast. It's Jake Tapper, a broadcaster, a true broadcaster and journalist at CNN. He is a person that I'm connected to, did not know I was connected to. I'm going to get it right totally. He has The Lead with Jake Tapper, which is every day. It's a weekday television show. And then on Sundays, he has State of the Union. He is a man whose parents both live in Philadelphia, and his mother knew my mother, and I didn't know that. And I reached out to him one night because I was watching his broadcast that day, and he just made me feel better. He said things that were not that biased, that were just truthful, and it's how I felt. And so I noticed that he was following me on Twitter. I direct messaged him, or as we say, DM'd, which sounds kind of weird. but we say it. We all say it, right? I guess. And he reached right back telling me what a fan his family was, and it was so heartfelt and kind. And then he told me that our mothers knew each other at Children's Hospital in Philadelphia, because my mother worked there, and so did his. And it just touched me. And then, of course, I did the full court press and asked him if he would be on my podcast. So that's what you're going to get to hear, is what can happen just out of a Twitter direct message. So I have to tell you a couple pieces of business, which is to rate and review and subscribe or follow the podcast, however you get your podcasts. And I'll be calling you guys. There's a phone number up there that you can call. Leave a message when I tell you on Twitter, Instagram, or Facebook, and I'll call you, and I'd love to talk to you. But with no further ado, here comes someone that I have utmost respect for, and he is genuinely a good person, Mr. Jake Tapper. Good morning.
How are you?
I'm okay. How are you?
Good. I'm good.
Are you all right?
I'm doing okay.
That's kind of why I called.
You just wanted to make sure I'm all right. I'm hanging in.
I really do.
Do I seem like I'm not doing all right, or you're just worried because the dystopia is so awful that everybody's having a hard time with it, and you know that I can't look away because it's my job?
Well, I had instinctual thoughts about you from watching how you broadcast. I didn't even know we had ties through our mothers from years ago. And I watch you, and I know that you need honesty. And I have similar qualities, and I don't like getting into it. I don't like it, but I get really angry when I'm told untruths, and it affects me emotionally.
Yeah, so it's very upsetting. Especially when it's about like serious things like life and death, right? I mean, like when it's, are we on? Is this, have we started?
Yeah, we have.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
If that's cool.
Yeah, totally. I think it offends me. It truly does. It truly is offensive to me when, for instance, you know, I can't get a straight answer and I'm talking about the coronavirus, you know, and I'm just trying, or lies are being told about the coronavirus, which continue to be told. And then in addition to the lies, there's also the refusal to publicly acknowledge truths, which is also not as upsetting and in some ways understandable, but also upsetting, such as, for instance, the testing czar, Admiral Brett Giroir, was on the show yesterday on my Sunday show, State of the Union. And he was, you know, giving the correct scientific medical answer about masks and distancing and, you know, what people should be doing. And I kept on bringing up President Trump's rallies, which, you know, are completely against everything he was saying. And I feel like I understand that assuming what he thinks. This is not based on any conversation I've had with Giroir, but just knowing how other people who consider themselves patriots have tried to steer their various ships in this time of the Trump tsunami, they feel like it does no good to pick a fight with the president, by which, and that the definition of picking a fight with the president is now saying a truth that the president doesn't like.
And that feeds him. It somehow feeds him to react with more energy against it. And then he doubles down on the fallacy.
Yeah, even if it's against his own best interest, like just happened today, Susan Collins, senator from Maine, running for re-election, Republican, said that she thinks that the vote and for a new Supreme Court justice to replace Ginsburg should, you know, come after the election, and the nominee should be picked by whoever wins the election. She's trying to win a Senate seat in a state that right now Trump is losing in polling. It's very competitive, and she's in a horrible position because she's been trying to navigate this. You know, she needs to win Biden voters to vote for her. You know, it's just very complicated for her politically. And Trump attacked her. People aren't going to stand for that, blah, blah, blah. For his own best interests, he needs to create a permission structure for Trump voters to vote for Susan Collins. If he wins, he needs Susan Collins to be in the Senate. But he can't even wrap his head around that, because all that matters is loyalty to him. So it's just all, none of it makes sense. You know,
and I have thought, and I'm sure you have too, I know exactly what to write for this man in prompter that can totally have everybody sway. If you're undecided, you will vote for him. If he says, okay, I was a little heavy-handed, I made some mistakes, I'm a very passionate person, I sometimes talk without thinking. None of this is possible in reality.
It's too late for any of this, but yes.
No, but it's not. It's not, because that's how we react to the last 40 seconds we heard.
Yeah, maybe.
Right before we go into a voting booth, if you can find one. If I have 60 mailboxes in my backyard, by the way. I don't know how they got there.
I think that there is, for people who are not naturally partisan Democrats or Republicans, I think that the beginning of the Trump presidency was, a lot of people looked at it as there is opportunity here for this person to be a great president and unite the country. He is not particularly ideological about anything. He's not particularly partisan. He used to be a Democrat. He's given money to Democrats and Republicans. Really, this guy could theoretically sign immigration reform, sign infrastructure bills. I mean, he could do a ton of things, but I think at this point we have seen that he, even if he's capable of reading what you wrote for him, Bob, on the teleprompter.
I'd add some jokes too. He would like those.
He has a sense of humor.
He actually does, but he wants to be Don Rickles, but Don Rickles came from a place of love, even.
Yeah.
And you got to have empathy and love to really reach everybody.
And Don Rickles, and to be honest, Don Rickles, may he rest in peace, his act wouldn't really cut it today.
No, no, it's I miss him, but he could not be doing it right now, except for the people of his age group or younger that get it. That meant that he meant no malice, but it is a dated thing. As brilliant as
Puerto Ricans
as he was.
Or whatever. I mean, you couldn't really do that today. I'm not saying. Yeah, anyway, you get my point.
Yeah, I do. But my question for you is how. So you wake up in the morning like this.
Yeah. I wake up in the morning and
so the eyes open and you go, oh God.
Well, to tell you the truth, like I get up, I often wake up at like, I normally like wake up time is 7, but these days I've been getting up at 5:36, 5:30, 6, and not for any reason. Checking my phone, seeing if there's any news, and then I'm able to go back to sleep. But like my body's waking me up. This has been happening just, I don't know, the last few months, I guess. I think
you're in unity with a lot of people. I mean, that's what I'm doing. I'm getting up to see what hammer dropped today, what has happened, what was said last night, what was the 3 a.m. tweet. You know, it's really, and that there's less of that. There's less 3 a.m. tweets, but more daytime capital letters tweets.
I don't know if there are less of them or just we're paying attention less to them. Because, because sometimes there will be something, somebody will say something, and President Trump tweeted something, and I'll look, and he tweeted it at like 12:30 in the morning. But just I was in bed, and I think people don't light their hair on fire as much anymore about,
Which is the color of his hair is actually fire. See, that's a comedian thing. That's not fair. You don't make fun of people's appearances.
I don't. But I'm a good, but I'm an easy audience. So I will say that.
Well, you're also, I have to say this because I adore what you do because you're really trying your best and you succeed in being a journalist. And some people might not think that if they don't fall on that side of the line, if they go, oh, well, CNN is as bad as Fox and everybody's going, but the end of the world right after this, you know,
that's an important message.
Do you fancy yourself now? Not fancy yourself. You're a journalist, correct?
I am a journalist. I consider myself to be a nonpartisan journalist. I consider myself to stake out positions only on truth and decency, but not on, for instance, just to bring up a controversial item in the news right now. I it's not my place to have a position on whether or not Republicans should, have a Senate confirmation hearing for a Supreme Court justice. Now, it is true that what they're doing goes against what they said in 2016, but that's just a fact. Not all of them. I mean, some of them had special little clauses in their statements. Like Mitch McConnell was very clear that, you know, we shouldn't do this during an election year because Obama and the Senate are different parties. But not everybody got the because Obama and the Senate are different parties memo. And some people just said, we should let the people decide if there's a vacancy during an election year. In any case, the larger point is I don't have a position on it. I'm happy to point out the hypocrisy, but it's not my place to have a position on it or have a position on whoever he nominates, just to present the facts about them.
But there is a human decency in letting the body be. I mean, the body's not even. I mean, it's cold, and you know, there's not even. Okay, I'm really sorry about her loss. Now, what we need to do now? I mean, that's just. Not human decency.
Although I will say, I mean, Democrats and Republicans both did that. There was a lot of immediate push on what we need to do now as a first reaction from Democrats and Republicans.
100%. I wasn't speaking only of Republicans.
Anyway, my only point is like, but taking a position for facts and taking a position for decency, like for instance, it's been reported that the granddaughter of Ruth Bader Ginsburg took dictation from her about her, you know, her last words about wanting to be her replacement to be named by whoever's elected in November. And that went to NPR and the Supreme Court public information officer confirmed that and whatever. So that's her dying wish, according to the family, the Ginsburg family. Now, there's nothing in the Constitution that says you have to honor somebody's dying wish as to who replaced. I mean, And it's fine for people to say, well, I'm glad she had that dying wish, but we're going to go according to the Constitution, blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's an acceptable answer. That's what basically a White House official told me on Sunday morning. But for President Trump to go on Fox and suggest that this whole dying wish thing is a Democratic hoax, which he did, that's indecent. That's indecent. So, I mean, I think that's kind of like how I see myself in this political world of journalism right now is, I'm not going to take a position on her successor or the confirmation hearings or whatever, but I think it's fine for me to say the family is literally sitting Shiva right now.
Right.
And you are saying that her granddaughter is part of a Democratic. I mean, that's indecent. That's not cool.
There's no human values. There's no just caring for actual family and just, I don't understand it. Every day, what I don't believe is that there could be this lack of caring for, I mean, the lack of empathy, always think there will be some. I mean, when I saw Trump going to the plane and they caught him off guard, that was the most human moment I'd seen of him where he found out for the first time.
I'm not sure that actually was the first moment. I think it's possible that he was briefed. But either way, it was a fine and nice response. I mean, and he has not said anything negative about her. He's obviously been told this woman was an icon. Don't say anything bad. And he has behaved so far. But I mean,
he was told that though. He had.
I think he had to be told
she was a good woman.
I think that's possible. I think it's possible somebody said, "Don't say anything bad about her. She was beloved." even, you know, even Scalia, the Scalia family loved her. I mean, like, people liked her
right.
as a person. She was an icon, even if you didn't believe in her politics. But, you know, I mean, it's just like him saying nice things about George Floyd and then retweeting some crazy video of Glenn Beck and some other person trashing George Floyd. And it's just like, I mean, literally, I mean, or all the trashing he's done of John McCain, not here to defend himself. I mean, I don't get it, but you and I were raised very similarly, I think.
Yeah.
By Jews in Philadelphia and taught to like.
Oh, we just lost a bunch of listeners.
Well, we'll get the Jewish Philadelphia market. That's really important.
It's big. You got that main line. You were there. You were in Marion, right?
Well, my dad lives in Marion. My mom lives in Center City. But to educate people, I heard about you before the world heard about you because my mom and your mom both worked at Children's Hospital and they would have lunch together. And so I had heard about you long before. And then you moved to Hollywood to become a big deal. But my
to
mom,
live in a single apartment in Palms.
Yeah. But then you became big and then you brought your family out with you. That's right. When my mom lost touch with your mom because you moved them out, which is so nice and sweet. And when I told my mom that you and I were talking, she was so excited and she remembered so many things, including how excited your mom was when you got your first gig, which was a tire commercial in Philadelphia.
My ex-father-in-law owned Atomic Discount Tires. He called it Atomic because it was first in the phone book.
That's brilliant.
And I did 9 television spots for, I think, $2,000.
Big money. And when was this, the 80s?
I had nothing. It was 77, something like that. But I had made a film about my nephew who had his face reconstructed while I was at Temple University as a documentary student. And it was about his face being reconstructed at Children's Hospital. And my mother helped even tee up him getting the surgery through insurance and stuff. And so I filmed at Children's Hospital. I was there a lot. I even filmed a surgery of another kid having the same surgery, very dramatic surgery, where they take your face off and reconstruct it to help him.
Oh, amazing. Is he doing okay?
He's doing really well now. He's a realtor and an event planner, as his mother would have been proud. But it's really interesting because we have something else similar. I went to USC. You went for one semester and quit.
Right.
Their film graduate program.
Yeah.
Or their film undergrad program. I'm not sure.
No, I did graduate program.
I quit their graduate film program, which you don't do. It's the best, one of the best film schools in the world, after 3 days because I'd won the student Oscar and the owner of the Comedy Store said, "You want to do stand-up?" And I said, "Yeah, well, quit grad school." I went, "Okay."
Funny. No, I did. I stuck out the semester. I didn't have the bug to be to do that. I just didn't. And I was sitting in class listening to the Clarence Thomas hearings on my yellow Sony Walkman.
Right.
And clearly my interest was elsewhere and came back east and ended up ultimately in journalism.
But then you, I mean, the Outpost is right now all over television.
Yeah. And so now I have a foot in film because I wrote this book about Afghanistan, a real story, a real tale.
When he said Afghan, I thought it was about like a blanket. I wasn't, I'm so uninformed, you know.
Because you think of me as somebody who provides comfort.
That's exactly it. You keep me warm at night when I'm feeling upset.
So I wrote this book and it was optioned and Rod Lurie, the director, did this amazing job. And
he's great.
Obviously, we had hoped it would be in theaters, and it is in some, but generally people have been watching it on video on demand, and it's going to be on Netflix in October, and it's been on Amazon and other places anyway, and it's gotten a great reception.
I can't wait to watch it. My wife and I have been waiting, and we'll probably watch it tonight. It's just I've been when the news is so hard and you're watching so much stuff, it's not always a relief.
To watch a war movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I hear you. I feel the same way. I come home and I want to watch something to escape. Like I've been watching Cobra Kai with my wife.
We watched it last night.
It's so good.
It's payback. It's done well from what it is.
It's so good.
From what it came from.
We're in season 2 now. And it's just so good. And For those who don't know, it's Johnny Lawrence, the evil bad guy villain from the Karate Kid, the 1984 Karate Kid, not the later versions. And it's his life 30 years later or whatever. And Danny LaRusso is there too and thinks of himself. But what's great about it is it's actually much more nuanced than the Karate Kid. It's both sides, the LaRusso side and Johnny Lawrence side, they both see themselves as good guys. And the other one is the bad guy. It's much more complex than the Karate Kid.
The original was made as a family film for young men and for, you know, spirited and don't be bullied and all this. And this is much more real. They made it mean something for a lot of people. I'm going to watch it tonight. That's one of our plans. I just said it to her before we started talking. That's what, you know, you're in quarantine when that's the highlight of your morning.
What are we watching tonight?
I've gone through so many series. Have you been watching a lot of other stuff to escape from all of this?
A ton. Yeah, I don't come home and watch the news. And people are like, oh, you need to watch this documentary. I'm like, no, I'm sorry. I can't watch a documentary.
I've been doing that too.
Documentaries or?
No, I flipped through the news. I started to watch it for hours, months and months ago. You're a solace for me. One question and I go to Fox because I want to see what the world's thinking.
Sure.
I want to know what everybody's thinking. And I find it hard that people can take a piece of minutia or a piece of footage and make that the basis and run it for 2 months, that same footage of, you know, cars
like
on
a
fire.
A burning car, yeah. The other thing that's curious to me about Fox programming is, and I guess probably people criticize like MSNBC for doing the same thing on the left, but is, you know, when there's an excess on the left, some crazy professor somewhere says something. And there are crazy professors for sure that have bizarre opinions. I mean, you see this stuff all the time, but it does seem like they focus on it as if it is a phenomenon. And I don't know that it necessarily always is. Like, for instance, there was a piece in NPR on NPR that was like in defense of looting. And it was really widely mocked and dissed on social media. But I could see somebody, I don't watch news when I get home, but I could see somebody turning that into, this is what liberals want. They defend looting.
That is what they're doing. They're saying that's the only way to move the needle is you have to loot. See what they're saying? And that's, but it happens from both sides. Jeez, but because the problem I have is if the president's source is a fringe someone with 100,000 people that follow that person, and that's the source, that can't be the source. It's like a South Park episode, you know? It's
There's a thing I call state rep phenomenon, which is our legislatures are full of, in addition to fine, upstanding public servants, just absolutely horrible people, left, right, center, whatever. And it is not uncommon to find a crazy state representative on the left saying something ridiculous or on the right saying something ridiculous. I don't cover them because it's state rep phenomenon. It's like you can find it,
right.
But if it's not emblematic of serious legislation or like something that's important, I don't. Why would we focus on it? We only have so many minutes.
Because it's all fear-based.
Right.
And it sells tickets.
Yeah, but that state rep phenomenon, which I try to stay away from. I probably haven't stayed away from it entirely in my entire career, but I try to.
Is your only day off Saturdays?
Yeah, although Saturdays I'm preparing for Sunday, but yeah.
So that's State of the Union. That's a big deal. I mean, the lead is a big deal because that's primetime, daytime. My eyes are on it, and it. You comfort me. You do, Jake.
Thank you.
You just do. I just look at you as if I had the brains and the IQ, I would be coming from where you're coming from.
Well, that's kind of you to say. I mean, I know people, because I hear from them, like, say, you know, you seemed rattled today, and that bothered me because normally I think of you as, you know, they'll say that to me.
Yeah, you've had a couple of anger headlines, but CNN likes that because it means, look what's going on. And that.
Yeah, but it's never, I mean, like for instance, I had on two Trump administration guests yesterday, and there was no anger. You know, there's no, you know, we had discussion, debate, whatever. The week before I had on Peter Navarro, and, you know,
Yeah, that traveled. Yeah.
Well, because I just was trying to get him to answer a very basic question, which I thought was an entirely fair question. And in fact, he said he wanted to talk about the Woodward tapes. Is that it? You know, February 7th, the president was acknowledging to Woodward privately that, you know, this disease was airborne and that it was five times deadlier than the flu. And 2 days, 2 weeks later, he was saying the exact opposite. This was in the middle of the time when he was, you know, dismissing the threat. And people really care about what a president says. People really follow his lead.
We want a leader. We really want someone who does unify everybody and gives them information.
Can you imagine if, again, we're back into hypothetical land, but if President Trump, let's even say, okay, February, March, they messed up, but look, it was early on and everybody was grappling with it. Can you imagine if since March he had led us through this this time, every night having sort of a press event in which he spoke, but in which he like let Fauci speak or Burke speak or whatever, and they talked about stuff and there were questions. Well, this state says this and this state said that, and he let the experts speak, but he sat there and presided over it, and like, okay, I think that's enough. Thank you so much. We'll be back here again tonight. We wanted. I bet he would be at 60% in the polls right
now. That's what I'm saying. Just a discourse. And everybody says, if you could bring everybody to the table, you'll probably need to put more food on this table. I mean, I think Mr. Barr must eat a great deal. But, you know, speaking of eating, we're just going to take a quick break. Watch this. This is nothing like what you get to do. Watch how quick this break is. Okay, we're back.
Nice.
the beauty.
Great. I wish those were commercial breaks.
So now you sit there during a commercial break. You've just gone through something probably emotionally exhausting that you're not trying to attach yourself emotionally to.
Right.
So you can go to the next moment. And then how long is a break for you? Is it 3 minutes, 4 minutes?
It depends on what's going on in the news and how much, whether we're killing breaks because it's a big breaking story, but assuming it's just a normal time, it could be a 4 minute break. I mean, they really, you know, our ad people are really squeezing the blood out of the stones. So, I'll sit there. I don't know the ads. I don't see the ads. So it's always fun.
It's all Imodium, because that's all people need right now.
it's funny to me when people like Bernie Sanders, suggest that like we're being influenced by the pharmaceutical industry because they run so many ads. Because he has asked me about this privately, and I've told him I have no idea what ads are playing. No one tells me before the show. I don't see them during the show. I literally have no idea. Now, that's not to say that he's wrong, that the pharmaceutical industry doesn't have too much say and this and that. I mean, I'm not going to disagree, but I'm just saying I have no idea.
It should all be mental health drugs to get us through.
I said to my wife that we need to really invest in alcohol. Because like if this thing is going to be going on for another year or two, I mean, I don't know about you. I don't know about where you are in drinking or anything.
I am not in a program. I might be. There might be a show I'm doing, we still drink. My wife will have a wine or.
Is there a way you could just like specifically invest in like tequila? Do you know what I mean?
I think there is.
And the fund will just like spread it out between, Casamigos and you just like,
they'll, yeah, it's who owns Don Julio and then just invest, find out it's probably, we come down to it. It's probably like, the Republican Party.
Or it's like General Electric. You know what I mean? Like it's everything.
Or Johnson and Johnson, it would probably be pharmaceutical companies that try to help you get off of alcohol. So when can you drink? I mean, you are working.
I don't like drink to excess, but if I have like a,
when can you get sloppy drunk?
Well, theoretically, not that I do, but theoretically, I mean, I have two kids and a wife who does not appreciate a sloppy drunk.
No, nor does mine.
But if I were to have more than one cocktail, Friday night would be the night to do it because I don't have to be on TV Saturday. That's right. It. Other than that, there's no night to do it, and which is fine. I don't really care. But all I'm saying is, like, I think investing in booze would be a smart investment strategy, just because it seems like everybody I know is drinking way too much.
Oh, it's horrific what's going on. And they're staying home, and everybody, most people are gaining weight because, you know, it's hard to work out. It's hard to be disciplined. I have friends that are. I've been pretty disciplined, which is unusual, but I've been working some too. I've been in the COVID environment studios.
What do you do to exercise?
I get on the bike or the elliptical, and I do Pilates. We have a Pilates machine in the house.
Nice. So. And you have a Peloton?
It's a Proformer.
Okay.
And the elliptical is a, can't remember what kind it is. It's a nice one.
We have a Peloton, and we have it in front of a giant TV, and I'm the only one that watches this TV. So it is entirely like, I went through 6 seasons of Bonch while on Peloton. And it became like a thing where I would be like excited. I'm going to go down and find out what happened. What, did you ever watch Bonch? Really, it's really good.
Go ahead. Sorry.
It's a detective series by Michael Connelly, and it's just really good.
And a Peloton is what I wasn't sure of. Is that the one that has the screen that takes you through it virtually? Is that that?
It's the one that has a screen that has a somebody yelling at you and what to do and turn up the stress and turn up the speed and this and that. But I
see. I like that. Can you make it? Can you program it to have a German accent? Because I'll follow that.
You know what's funny about that? My friend Jeff and I were talking about the fact that Waze was developed in Israel. And we were just joking about, like, what if Waze, like, instructed you the way that Jews instruct you? So it was like, why don't you take a left turn? All right, you didn't listen to me on the left turn. Maybe come up here, take a left turn. Again, you're not listening. Okay, you know, anyway. But with an Israeli
accent. Or if it's like your mother, you know, the Jewish mother. You know, I don't know. My mom would do. I don't think she would even harp on me. She would. You did the right thing, Bobby. You make another left, you'll be fine. Maybe you want to stop and get a sandwich.
Oh, just turn whenever you want. It's fine.
I'm not sure about Waze. And have you been on Citizen? Do you have the Citizen app?
No, what's that?
Citizen is an app that tells you what's going on in your area or all over the country of where there are riots, where COVID cases are up, where a man is murdered, where there's any kind of problems anywhere, earthquake, fire, flood.
And
it's a horrific thing, but it has, I got it when we had to evacuate because of the fires here in California. Mm. So it made sense, you know, fire 1/2 mile from you. That's like,
oh my God, I'm so sorry. You're okay. So
yeah, we're okay because we're down in Southern California, Northern, as you know.
Yeah. My brother lives in Northern California. They say they can't even breathe. It's just so awful.
It's horrific. And of course the solution is to rake millions of acres, to actually rake. It's like, go clean, pick up the pebbles on all beaches. It's insane. It doesn't even make sense. Right. Count your freckles.
And also, as Gavin Newsom pointed out, Governor Newsom, like, a majority of the forests in California are federal lands. They're not state. And the federal government is in charge of them, not the state government. And it's just, but nothing matters.
But then they get the one soundbite out of Gavin Newsom where he says, yes, we haven't done the forest work that we should have done. There is work we could have done. And that's the bite that enables the other side to go, see, it is their fault. You know, they admit it, rather than we had a fire 2 years ago and 2 years ago, a year ago, and we needed federal help. We needed the planes to come in. And from what I can remember, we didn't get them. And we didn't get them right away because the president was angry with California. And that to me is that's not a president. You have to do the job. Even if you don't believe in the beliefs, you know, well, that Democratic governor let the forest go bad by not raking it or using a leaf blower. So I'm not sending them airplanes to put out their fire.
Well, this is what really worries me about this era that we're in and what happens in going forward, whoever wins in November, is President Trump has legitimately tried to make the argument that, whether behind the scenes or kind of suggesting in front of the cameras, that he's only president of the red states. I mean, that's kind of like a thing that he suggests.
It's, and he could totally win if he didn't do that. If he could somehow have the gene to be inclusive.
Well,
He doesn't.
That's just not him. So, I mean, so the suggestion of, like, if you take away the deaths in the blue states, we're, you know, it's actually not so bad. Why would you take away the deaths in the blue states? Like, what is that? Who even looks at it that way?
No, it's not. It's not even like sports where you want your, you know, your Cubs to win. So death to the other team. Right. You know, we're not in the Running Man or Rollerball. This is not the future of competitive hatred.
But there have been people who were in the Department of Homeland Security. I'm thinking of a guy who was former chief of staff there, Miles Taylor, who said that, you know, there were times that Trump talked about not providing aid to California because it's a Democratic leaning state.
Yeah. And we felt it here. We felt it in those last fires. We definitely felt it here.
But these attitudes, like, they don't only, I mean, they infect the nation. My friend Van Jones, who's a commentator on CNN, he has this great riff he has where he talks about how a president is not just a government leader. He's also something of a spiritual leader of a country. Right. So John F. Kennedy inspired people to join the Peace Corps, and Ronald Reagan inspired people to go to Wall Street. And he asked, this is like in 2017, what is Donald Trump inspiring us to do? And I think we've seen a lot of divisiveness. And I do wonder what the infection will be, if you'll pardon the metaphor, which is this idea that only the blue states should only care about blue states and red states should only care about red states. I mean, I've seen liberals on Twitter say something like, okay, you know, well, we should cut off Alabama. We should cut off Louisiana. Now, you know, maybe those attitudes existed before Trump. I don't know. But like, it's just such a sick way to look at the world. I mean, right. I have no idea who you voted for in 2016. And the guy's honest, I couldn't care less. I really don't. You know, like, you're an American. You're a friend now, I hope. Are we friends?
No, I want, my plan is to be in New York, get to visit my daughters, and I get you on a Friday night for that 90-minute drink.
You know, I'm in D.C., though.
Oh, so you have to get on. This is even better. The hell with my kids. I love Plan DC. Maybe I'll do Friday night at the Jack Singer Theater, which I love. And well, then I don't get to see it. So blow off the show, and we'll plan a dinner. We'll go somewhere nice.
We'll figure it out. I mean, maybe you bring her down to DC, and Justice Judy or whoever's been appointed can give you a tour, and then you can come by our house and we'll take it from there. But in any case, my only point is, like, I don't care. Like, if you're a decent person, like, that's all I care about.
I would vote Republican tomorrow if I had a person that I went, wow, that will bring people together.
I bet you voted for Arnold.
Arnold, that's an easy one in California. But Arnold, and I'd known Arnold, and I would visit the White House because Barbara Bush was very kind to me, and I came there and did things for athletics in schools, and I went to when Clinton was in office and Hillary had lunch programs and reading. I went for them. I go to where it makes sense for a good noble cause for someone who's coming from a good place. So I'm proud. It's funny with George W. Bush. A lot of us. Some people weren't fans. The war felt unjust. I was upset about the war. And now what I would give to see little paintings of dogs all over the White House and just the sweet guy that's banding together and hugging Michelle Obama, you know, just.
Although, see, this is the thing. Remember when Ellen sat next to George W. Bush at a Cowboys game.
Yeah.
Maybe like a year ago. And she was pilloried by the left for doing that.
Right.
And look, I get people that oppose George W. Bush and don't, you know, whatever. I mean, people can have their political opinions and this and that. And
I wasn't happy with what was going on. But in retrospect, when you see what kind of a person someone is and what they're standing up for now, people change. People, your feeling, your perceptions of them change. We've never been surrounded by this much hatred. I can't remember this. I wasn't around during the Civil War. I wasn't around. My dad was around during the Depression. So he saw people. He knew people whose fathers jumped out of windows. You know, he knew a couple people because people were broke.
Yeah.
Alcohol was real big then, and it wasn't legal.
It wasn't even alcohol. I bet it was moonshine, right? It was, it was like rubbing alcohol that people
lived on, rubbing alcohol and gefilte fish. That's what they lived on.
No, it wasn't even gefilte fish. It was just that jelly that would like the congealed jelly.
Wrong. That's the jarred and canned gefilte fish. That is really upsetting. That's the kind of stuff like an alien baby is born out of. And it's got carrots in it. It's horrific. You need to have real gefilte fish. If people don't know what we're talking about, it's a little fish. It's kind of round. Like a meatloaf. And it's got
I don't even know what it is. It's a carp that's been breaded and formed into a strange like.
But I was a deli clerk in Chestnut Hill, so I can tell you, I knew how to kill a carp. I didn't want to do it, but you could do carp, whitefish, or pike, and then you put it in a meat grinder, and you've got basically like fish meatloaf is what you're making. You make a ball out of it, and your grandmother or Bubby puts it in the oven.
This is like music to my ears, but I have to tell you, like. You know, like I would get mocked in college when we would order like hoagies, and I would order a tuna hoagie. People would be like, "Why are you eating?" Like they looked at me with such disgust. Like, why was I? I don't know. I'm Jewish. It wasn't even about the kosher. It was just
because you were not an Italian meats kind of guy.
No, not really. I mean,
see, this is the kind of probing stuff I want to find out about you.
But it's not. It wasn't because I didn't want to eat pork. It was just because I really enjoyed the taste of tuna.
Tuna. What about like a cheesesteak? I mean, we're talking.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, of course. Yeah, this again, it wasn't kosher. It was just because I liked, but they didn't have cheesesteak. I'm thinking like when I was in college up in New Hampshire.
They had them in Philly though. But so now, can I ask how old your kids are? Is that okay?
My son is about to turn 11. My daughter turned 13. A few weeks ago.
That's so cute. Congrats.
Yeah, they're great kids. They're amazing kids. They're just sweet and smart. And, you know, they're dealing with this. This is awful for kids.
That's what I want to know. Because my daughter, I have two daughters, one in LA and I have two in New York. And they are incredibly upset about the future of the world. And worried
how old,
about
old are they?
They are 33, 31, and 27. And the 33, they're all artists. And the 33 and the 31 are in downtown New York and Brooklyn. They walk to each other.
Oh, that's sweet.
And they are just angels and brilliant.
Is there anything better than your kids being friends and liking each other? Just like Jack was making Alice, these are my kids, Jack was making Alice laugh the other day. And my wife and I were just sitting in the kitchen, just listening to them make each other laugh. And it was just like, I could listen to this all day. Just... I don't even know what they're laughing at. I'm sure it's stupid, but like it's so, it's just music to my ear.
I'm sure they're morons, but
I'm sure it was about parts or something. No. But I'm just like, but the point is, like, it was just, I mean, they are, you know, 11 and 13. So, but the point is, it's so sweet to listen to.
That's the other thing that I think is a positive about quarantine. You know, there are negatives. Some people will get divorced, some people will split up, some. Families can't be together. I want to be emancipated, and that'll be the parents saying that when it's over. But there are also a lot. There's a lot of stuff you go through that would have never happened. And I know people that are with their kids. They say it's too much, but they're loving it so much. So many of my friends are loving being with their kids.
Yeah, I'm at work right now, but I did the show from home from March until August.
Yeah,
and I had no problem with it at all. I mean, I loved it. I was there and the kids were there and, you know, I was with my wife and it was just nonstop. I loved it. I mean, I really just absolutely did. And then when I started, you know, now I come back to work because the lighting's better here. The camera's better here. There's no delay. I get it. I understand why my boss wanted me back, but I do miss it. I mean, that was, I did feel very lucky that I was able to be there for my kids and work from home.
Especially now, especially with so much fear and they have to take it in. They watch you, I assume.
No. Oh, God, no. No, we do not. I do not come home and talk about the infection rate in Florida. I mean, I you know, if they have questions, I will answer them and I'll answer them.
Do they watch you during the day? Do they?
No. Oh, no. I don't want my kids to watch me.
I didn't let my kids watch me on Full House. I'm not even kidding.
Really? Why? That was at least family friendly.
It was. I just embarrassed because I was in like a dinosaur outfit that night, you know? They did watch it. One of my daughters used to sneak watch it. I can't watch myself on television. And I'm told a lot of people can't.
I should tell you, my wife was, I was a little too old to be watching Full House.
Oh, for sure. It wasn't made for you anyway. It was made for a lot of ladies. It was who it was made for.
When did it come on air?
1989, something like that.
Okay, so I was like 18, 19. It wasn't aimed at me.
No, totally not your show. But the video show that I did was your show, that America's Funniest Home Videos.
When did that come on?
Around 89, and that was a lot of sports stuff, so people got hit in the nuts and people.
I remember it, but honestly, I was in college, so I wasn't watching a lot of TV other than Letterman. That was it. Letterman and sports was it. I didn't watch. I missed the whole 4 years of primetime television. But my wife, this is what I wanted to tell you, is 8 years younger than me, and she loved Full House and America's Funniest Home Videos. And in fact, our kids have now seen not only every episode of Full House, but every episode of Fuller House.
Oh my God, I could score big time with props at your home.
Yeah, you'd be huge. You would be huge. And Jack, my son, who I think would love America's Funniest Home Videos. Although I guess it's still on, right?
It is still on. Alfonso hosts it, and it's still like one of the top 10 shows on TV. It's amazing.
You have a piece of it, right?
I was a well-paid hired hand.
Oh, okay. For some reason, I thought you had a piece of both those shows, but
I have pieces from the shows. I have things from the set. I got the barometer.
Hearing, like that, you made some money. That's all. Yeah. I remember hearing during that era you made some money, because I do remember, by the way, the first time I ever saw your stand up, which is so good. And obviously,
thank you, Jake.
Not
for your kids right now.
It's not Full House ish at all.
No, but I was like that before. Right.
And they saw that, and then you got Full House. But I'm just—it's so good. When can I see you do stand up? That's what I want to know.
I am actually going to go do something this at the end of this week. I'm going to Ohio, and Dave Chappelle has invited me to be part of his summer camp. Oh. So I get to go there with these wonderful.
Does that mean it will not be televised?
It will not be. It might be filmed, and he might release it as something one day. But my new special, I would have shot around now if there had not been this horrific. I don't know. But we were getting ready to go, and then we would have found out where it was. But I hadn't even started. I was about to start the whole tour, and then it'll be next year sometime. But you'll be the second person to know.
I'll let you know
because it's really
so good. Maybe you want to do what Ellen did. She came back today. I don't know if you saw. And in her audience, she has like little vertical.
Yeah, they're all doing that. I was on the premiere of Kelly Clarkson show, and that also came back with a Zoom audience, with the vertical Zoom audience. And I did another show on Fox that's a spinoff of The Masked Singer, and Ken Jeong's hosting it, and it's called I Can See Your Voice. And that audience was also Zoom people, and they are part of the show, you know.
It's not nothing. It's not.
And I sometimes find it more palatable. Once in a while, there have been some real fun things that have happened through the Zooms that you wouldn't normally get. I just like that people adapted, that people are trying to be at a higher ground and trying to entertain people still. And that's why, well, first, thank you for being on the podcast, because it helps. I'd say you take one more break, because then I'll let you get back to, because you go to work shortly, don't you? You're like minutes away.
Well, I'm at work. Yeah, I got a little time. I got in like 15 minutes, I have to do my call with my staff to go over.
Okay, so I'm going to take this quick little message. Okay, we're back. So now the call with the staff. So the staff says to you, this just off the wire, this just got said.
No. That is always, we're constantly doing that. This is new. That's just nonstop throughout the day on email and text. At 2 o'clock, so the show's on at 4 o'clock East Coast. So at 2 o'clock, we just go through the show, the script and the questions for our guests and everything. And we just try to figure out the right tone and tenor and whether or not we're leading with the right thing and how we're doing it. Now we've been talking about it since 8:30 this morning. I've been talking about it with my staff and they've been talking about it since 8 this morning about what we're going to do and what we're going to cover. Obviously, you know, I think right now, I'll just look at the script file. We're going to leave because we're expecting Trump is going to talk in a few minutes and Biden is going to talk in a few minutes. So we're expecting to lead with whatever they say an hour before the show. And then there's a piece we have. Biden will be in Wisconsin. We have a political panel. Then coronavirus in the B block. C block is RBG and her death and senators. How are they going to vote? We have an interview with Senator Patrick Leahy. See, this is news to me. I didn't know we had this. Right. Senator Patrick Leahy was the top Democrat on the Judiciary Committee at one point. And then we have a piece on whether or not Biden is losing the war on doorknobs. So that's it.
I thought you were going to say doorknobs. I was like, we're down to hardware.
Well, door knocking on doors, because the Trump team, you know, is the they've been up and running now for 5 years, like getting
Donald Trump has been calling me. I can't block the number. And I answer the phone. He goes, "Hello, I'm Donald Trump." And I'm like, "No, OK, you know, I just can't take it. It's please don't call me at home." Yeah. You can't say to a recording, "How did you get this number?"
Do you really get recordings from Trump
every day?
Seriously.
I'm on some kind of odd auto dial. And I don't know what to do. There's nothing I can do. And I believe no matter what happens, say he doesn't win, I believe I will get those calls for the next 12 years.
Well, that list is theoretically not part of the government. It's part of the campaign.
Right. So they will turn it over to whoever else.
Turn it over to Trump TV first of all, let's also just say he could very well win. But if he doesn't, or even after his second term or third term or fourth term, it could be, yeah. Trump stakes, Trump universe.
Well, his fourth term, I guess Ivanka would be almost president at that point. Maybe he'll announce that in the middle of his fourth term, that she's going to finish the next 2 years.
She would have to. I think technically she would have to move to a different state, but that's fine. He's moved to Florida. She's in New York. Fine. Never mind. It's already taken care of.
I read something about you and Ed Rendell. Was that an investigative thing that you had done, one of your earlier journalistic?
When I was in high school, I interned for him when he ran for mayor.
There you go. That's what I was thinking of. But this is why I'm not a newsman, Jake.
Well, you knew there was a Rendell thing. Yeah, he was a great mayor in Philadelphia.
He liked me. He came to see my stand-up. He was very nice. He says, "I need a picture for my office." I told him to please hang it in your bathroom. And so supposedly, while he was mayor, there was a picture of me over his toilet in his office.
He told me that you were his second favorite Philadelphia Jewish comedian after David Brenner.
Yes, another Temple student.
Yeah. And they brought you back at all, Temple?
I came back because Lou Klein was a mentor, and I was an intern on the Mike Douglas show when I was like 18 years old. And so I've come back and done a couple things. I haven't spoken at graduation, which I've wanted to do.
That's
so
great.
I just need to ask them and give them some money, I think, is kind of the key.
That's it. You haven't given money. That's you've diagnosed the illness right there.
I think I have.
I got a Lou Klein Award a couple of years ago.
Did you know Lou? Did you meet him?
Nope.
He was a great guy. He was one of the guys that started NAPTI, one of these real cool.
Oh, amazing. Yeah. No, he's a legend.
I know you got to go to work, but I just wanted to somehow end on a positive note, because this thing, what's happening, you're going through the next weeks, and this is insanity, of which we've never seen. It's a cage match. It's like Thunderdome right now.
Elections get nasty, but we already have President Trump tweeting or retweeting false allegations that Joe Biden is a pedophile. I mean, so we're way beyond anything this republic has ever seen. It used to be, and I know it because I used to be one of the smarty pantses that would say, well, hold on, in the election of 1800, allies of Thomas Jefferson would would issue pamphlets calling him a hermaphrodite, which is true. But so there was always like, it's been worse. It's been worse. We can now say it has never been worse.
It's never been worse.
And by the way, it is really just one side. Because yes, Biden is doing attack ads, and I'm sure there are lies being told on the Democratic side, but there is nothing like what the Republicans.
Can't he sue on defamation of character? I mean,
not when you're a public figure. There really isn't. Ironically, Trump wants to change the laws, the libel laws and the defamation laws, but he would be the number one plaintiff. I mean, he would be the number one defendant in these suits.
Yeah, I mean, there's no pictures of Biden with Epstein, you know. I mean, there's no video, and he denies he ever met the man. You know, once I'm lied to, you know, if trick me once, trick me twice, lie to me 300 times, and I'm pretty much kind of over it. I can't.
300, that's the one, that's where you draw the line.
I think so. But it's also the lie on the lie to negate the lie 10 minutes later. It's very unfortunate that we're in a place that we can't have the Jimmy Stewart of it all, that we can't have Mr. Smith going to Washington to try to speak for justice and for kindness and for honesty. And that's why I so respect what you're doing, because your voice is really important right now.
Thank you, Bob. Well, that's very nice of you. And I was very honored when I got the DM. I was also, as you probably could tell, very excited to tell you, and have been since like probably 1983, about our connection, about the fact that our moms were friends. And really, honestly, very amazed, because my mom, God bless her, lovely woman, but you know, in her late 70s, but boy, she remembered everything about your mom. She remembered everything.
Please give my love to your mom.
And I will.
Tell her there's nothing lascivious in that comment. And I did like the graduate.
You do not have to wear glue. You do not have to.
No, I'm not even. I'm just a neighborly guy. But my mother was a very positive person. And I know, and they passed, both my mom and dad. But she would tell me, and I hear her voice sometimes much too much, that it's going to be okay, that we're going to get through this, that it might seem like all has gone to hell and that evil has taken over and these lies and inhumanities. My dad was very against human injustice and human rights. And I was raised the opposite of even understanding what racism was. I had to learn what it was, because I wasn't raised that way.
Right.
And I was there when there were segregated bathrooms as a kid. And I was 6 years old saying to my dad, what's going on? And he was emotional about it, because anyone that thinks those kind of things are right is unfortunately misguided and needs to be retaught.
It's amazing, because it sounded like we were brought up in the same house, because my dad and my mom were the same, always talking about injustice, always talking about bullies. Frank Rizzo as the mayor in Philadelphia in the early 70s, and he was a bully. You know, the Black Panthers were there, and they were definitely a radical group, but generally speaking, they were they were trying to bring attention to the fact that Black people were not treated fairly and equally. And I feel like there is part of you right now that wants me to tell you what your mom would tell you, which is that we're going to be okay and that we're going to get through this and everything is going to be okay. And I do feel that way, Bob. I have to tell you, we are going to be okay. We are going to get through this. We are going to be okay. Now, I don't know when that is. And I don't know, you know, I think that no matter what happens on November 3rd, and we should really start preparing people for
the 17th.
Yeah. I mean,
December.
It might take some time. And the truth of the matter is elections are never called by states that night. I mean, you know, like we never have all 50 states saying what the final vote count is on election night. That never happens. The media calls it, we project it, but that's not the states doing it. And in any case, my only point is, whenever it ends and whatever the result and however difficult it might be, we still are going to get through it all and we still are going to survive it. And ultimately, at some point, things will be back to some sort of normal. Now, it's always going to be, you know, in a republic like ours, there's always going to be a lot of mess. That's just what we signed up for. That's why we don't live, you know, in an authoritarian country.
Right.
But I do have confidence in the American people, and I do have confidence in the United States. I really do.
I do too. And I'm so glad we got to talk. And I'm going to see you on a Friday night in Washington.
All right. I love it.
I'm sending all my best to you and your family, and thank you for all you're doing, Jake.
Thanks, Bob. I appreciate it. Well, I'm sure we're going to be in touch. So
I look forward. I'm going to call you every night as soon as you're done with your broadcast in the afternoon, and then on Sunday morning as soon as you're done.
You know, why don't we can ease into it. I mean, I definitely want to pursue a friendship, but we can ease into it, maybe.
Just going to leave this Zoom open, so every time you come back to your computer, I'll just be here. I'll be like Tom Joad.
The bathroom. Yeah, sure. When I'm on all right. Awesome. Thanks so much.
All the best. Thanks so much, you Jake.
Bye-bye.
Jake Tapper. He's a good man, ladies and gentlemen and kids. I don't know what to say, you know? It just makes you think that no matter what you believe, he's just trying to be an honest man. And that's all I'd like to be, and that's why I look up to somebody like him. And he's so much younger than me. Why couldn't I have learned earlier? You can always see him every day on CNN during the day and on Sunday's State of the Nation. And Friday nights, that's his drinking night. I don't know what to say. I really enjoyed talking with him. I'm sure you enjoyed listening to him. I hope you did. I hope you didn't have negative feelings, because I don't know why. It's a very positive, good human being, and trying to be the broadcaster that a lot of people need right now. So my business to tell you is to do what you do. You know, you rate, review, subscribe, or you follow, or you call that number up there. It's right up there. That actually, if you're looking at me right now on, you know, on YouTube, that's Rodney Dangerfield and Red Fox in a picture that was taken by my friend Paul Mobley, a great photographer. And that will be in the background, because so many people complained that I have a wall switch behind me. And there's a big mirror that my mother gave me that's right up there. Well, she didn't give it to me. She passed away and I took it. That's what you do. You raid the house when they go. And I got that. But I'm wishing you guys all the best. And you can call me. You call that number up there. Leave a message. I'll tell you on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Instagram stories when I'll be calling people, and I'll be doing it soon. So keep a lookout for that. I'd love to talk to you, see how you're doing. And it's a connection I get to have with some people that want to talk. I send you the best. My thanks to Jake Tapper, and everybody hang in there, and lots of health and safety to all of you. All right, why did I have to go so sad at the end? Let me be positive. Hang in there. Life's good. But it's like Jake said, it really is going to be okay. And I think we all need to hear that. And it's not a bad mantra. So that's what I leave you with. It really is going to be okay. See you later. Talk to you later. May not see you. May just hear you. You may just hear me. All right.